Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 468.
This week on the podcast, we've got an exhaustive list of all 25 of the candidates who may or may not be running in the GOP presidential primary.
Plus, No Labels is a Republican organization, but you probably knew that in your heart.
And Ron DeSantis is a man who loves making us right.
Plus, Iowa Republicans accidentally admit that elections should be national holidays.
And Barbie's geopolitics and cartoon maps are a new area of concern for Republican lawmakers.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey, y'all, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Here we are, friends.
Here we are on a random Wednesday.
A random day. And listen, we really care about you because we're recording from an active construction site right now.
That has no toilet. Most importantly, I think construction site really undersells what we're contending with, which is being people that had to pee before we left.
I know. I texted Lila and I was like, remember to empty yourself before you arrive at my home.
It's a big construction project going on.
Yeah.
Dust everywhere.
It's exciting. Yeah.
A potentially too big sink. All the things that you might have in a construction zone.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
But yeah, I'm going to be at Netroots this weekend.
I know. I'm so jealous. I was supposed to go, and then there's this, and
so if you're a listener who doesn't know us and you're at Netroots, come say hi.
Oh, yeah. Find Lila.
But also, I'm hoping to have a lot of great gossip.
I know. I can't wait to hear all of it.
Yeah. As of next week.
Please.
Until then, though, we wanted
to... Bring it back to the pod.
Obviously.
Yeah.
We wanted to make sure that we... after a few weeks of themed episodes, we wanted to make sure that we got back to the nitty gritty of who is running for president and who the fuck are these people?
Yeah, exactly. Because we had Ben on and he was amazing and it was so needed after, all of the
SCOTUS
season, right? Exactly. Terribleness. And so now we're here to remind you of all 74 people that are or maybe will be soon running for president.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We took down a list.
We took down a list.
And you need a list.
Oh, I had to find a list because I would not have remembered all of these people. I feel like there have been primaries before where we have challenged ourselves to name all of the people who are running. And I feel like by the time we start rolling with this, I'll be able to do it. But we are early enough right now where I would not have remembered some of these people. In addition, I also did not know some of them.
And
I was disappointed in myself about that because this is what we do here. But there are a couple people on this list that I guarantee you will not have heard of.
I feel like we're both early enough, but also deep enough that things have gotten confusing very quickly.
That's why we're here for you.
It reminds me a little of the early 2020 Democratic primary when all of a sudden there were like 34 people running.
Sure.
And there were like a lot of people that you heard about once when they announced in like a, back page news item. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, we're supposed to remember on a list of 34 other people and obviously couldn't. We're in that territory right now with the Republican primary field. Which is funny because the Republican primary field has almost no relevant people in it.
I know. And also, only two people polling over 4%.
Right.
So, like, what's everybody doing?
That's nothing. Because I was going to say a lot of these people are not polling at 1%. So, imagining a field where everyone has, like, a little slice of the pie, that's not what we're looking at here. We're looking at a field where Trump has the pie.
Right.
And then, like, poor Ron DeSantis is just, like, nipping at his heels from an increasingly sad position.
I know, we're going to get into
way
that.
In the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
And then you have like a bunch of other randos like Mike Pence that everyone forgot about the moment that they announced.
Yeah.
But let's go through the list.
Right. Let's talk about Trump first because we also wanted to mention, we haven't done like a full pod since I think we did talk about the indictment, but then there's been fallout from that. And he sort of had that famous
rebuttal.
Interview where he like, certainly wasn't an official rebuttal, although maybe it was because like, who knows whether anything
what,
that he
is said
with him, right? Yeah, exactly. But he's sort of like, it's the one where he hilariously called Fox News fake news, and he said everything was fine. He did nothing wrong. He said his voice was fine.
That's right.
And then he also said he didn't see the recordings, but then later in the interview referenced something that made it seem as though clearly he had seen and heard the recordings. He said he had a lot of papers stacked up.
Yes,
I think at one point he also said it was golf course plans.
Yes, didn't he did say it was golf course plans.
That was a separate denial. But, like, he's had all of the reasons why everything was fine.
Well, also, he's a man who's really proud of his... of the number of papers he has around a lot of time. So, like, I think that
that's how you really know somebody's important, guys.
He really feels like the proper excuse in any situation where he's been caught criming.
I've got papers,
is
guys.
Just to be like, there's papers
too
everywhere.
Many papers.
Yeah. Because this is, remember, he's also done press conferences where he used blank paper as props and just stacked it up to let us know how many files he had.
That's right.
Like, he's a man who believes deeply in the power of stacks of papers.
Yeah.
And he didn't disappoint in this regard as well.
Yeah.
But he's far and away leading the pack here in a way that's embarrassing for America. It's embarrassing for us personally. It's embarrassing for him personally. Everything about it is embarrassing.
It's certainly embarrassing for everybody else that has announced they're running for president.
It's really embarrassing. It's
embarrassing for Joe Biden because he's beating him in some polls.
Exactly. If you're wondering of the list of people who should be the most embarrassed by Trump just like dominating the primary field at
this
stage, it's anyone who has announced that they're running for president is on the top of that list.
Yeah.
That includes Democrat and Republican.
Yeah.
And then the rest of us are somewhere on the bottom of that list. I feel like maybe he's the person who's the least embarrassed about all of this, or even should be the least embarrassed about all of this. And that's telling you something.
It is.
In second place, a distant second place, we have Ron DeSantis.
Ron DeSantis. We're going to get into a separate story later about his campaign, which
in a segment that we might have just called I Told You So.
We have a few I Told You So's.
Yeah. This is a big I Told You So.
I think actually they're all in the DeSantis section.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, teaser, it's that he's awful.
Right.
And that we knew that he was going to fail in the polls.
Right.
And then here we are.
Here we are. We have Chris Christie.
Chris Christie moving up, I think, something from like 2 to 4%.
He's the only one who's staked out any position so far in the primary.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the rest of these people, I couldn't tell you what their platform is. It's just like, I'm not Donald Trump, but I am.
Well, Nikki Haley is the next person. And she seems to, I think, didn't she in her town hall sort of like make it seem like the issue of our time was whether trans women can play in sports or something?
Yeah. She did, and it's not. So that's one reason she's not shooting ahead in the polls.
One of many.
Right.
Yeah.
We have Mike Pence, Mr. Wax himself.
Sure.
I couldn't tell you what his campaign has been up to because as soon as he announced, everyone immediately stopped paying attention.
That's right.
We have Tim Scott.
Oh, sure.
Mr. Forever teasing he's going to run for president.
Finally.
Pulled the trigger. Made no further remarks after that.
Yep.
And then we have...
Now we're going to get into the...
A few randos.
Who's that now?
Yeah. So we first on this list have a Dallas area businessman.
Yep.
And non-denominational pastor.
That's the worst. Listen... I don't want any pastors running for president, and I'm not necessarily here to contend that one would be better than the other, but I'll tell you what would be the worst, and it's a non-denominational pastor.
Yeah.
They're not to be trusted.
Well, that's like megachurch territory.
That's a megachurch territory, and from Texas, no thank you, ma'am.
Absolutely not.
We're not doing that.
So that's Ryan Binkley.
Yeah. He is trying to hit an aspirational note. He's up with TV ads.
I mean
these mega church pastors have more money than he's
dollars,
probably
I'm sure,
got as much money as, I mean, probably more than anybody except for Trump.
I was just going to say, who are you going to name that he wouldn't have as a mega church pastor that he wouldn't have more money than? I can't think of anyone on this list.
But he said in that ad that... he wants to, what is it? Oh, he's promised to renew a country that is strong, unified, and reconciled to God and each other.
Gross.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to pick him up out of a lineup.
Oh, my God. Well, he looks like, you wouldn't be able to pick him up out of a lineup of any humans. Certainly, you wouldn't be able to pick him out of a lineup of a megachurch pastor lineup.
Oh, well.
Because
they all
definitely look the same.
Look
and he looks like that. So if you're imagining what that person looks like, you're imagining what Ryan Binkley looks like.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that maybe there's some kind of superpower in being so unrecognizable because of your genericness that you almost seem like an everyman. And that's like the note he's striking here.
Maybe.
Where it's like, if you look like nobody, do you maybe look like everybody?
Maybe.
You look like a human presence.
Yeah, sure.
You know, with very shiny teeth, I would assume. I bet he has great teeth, or fake teeth, at least.
Yep.
Much like, you know, him and Tom Cruise, I'm sure, go to the same... tooth doctor, whatever. There's a lot of Hollywood teeth people and non-denominational megachurch pastor teeth people are probably similar people. So that's somebody that even if you saw his ad on TV and saw him personally participating on a debate stage, you would probably not be able to retain any physical or mental, you know, sort of
You want to know who loves that shit, though? The people of Iowa. That's it.
I mean, there's a reason that he's got ads up in Iowa right now.
That's right.
That's going to work. Great.
Yeah. Non-denominational white generic pastors.
I mean,
it's a recipe for success.
Sign them up.
Right there. Yeah. We got Doug Burgum.
Right.
We've talked about him before. He's the guy from North Dakota who's just looking for a trip to the border.
He's looking for somewhere warm, you guys. He's looking for a chance. The biggest issue of North Dakota's time, the Mexican border.
That's right. We got Larry Elder. If you're listening from California, you remember him.
As a loser.
Failed loser. in the California recall.
That's right.
First place loser.
First place loser.
Right.
We have Will Hurd.
Yeah, we talked about him fairly recently because he's a recent entry.
Congressperson that you've never heard of for any reason other than us telling you recently that he was running for president.
That's right.
Asa Hutchinson.
Right.
Who, he was one of the early announcers.
Yeah, and he's doing a, sort of never Trump situation, but just not in any sort of forceful manner that makes you feel like
he's doing really like genteel never Trump, which I just don't think is gonna break through the noise of the media cycle right now.
It's not gonna take. Perry Johnson, also very early, but I had forgotten about him. See, this is why you need the
list.
You
may be able to forget about him in the future because he's mostly famous for failing to get on a ballot in the past.
Right, because of signature collecting fraud.
That's right.
He calls himself a quality guru.
I've been trying to figure out for months now what
is. Is that a guru of quality, or does he just mean like he's a good guru?
The first time I heard that, I filed it away in my mind as something that I needed to Google, and then I forgot to. But every once in a while, I just have the phrase "quality guru" run through my mind, and I can never retain why.
Yeah.
And so this is a reminder.
I'm going to tease something on this podcast because sometimes when we say that we're going to do something on the podcast, then that forces our hand to actually do it. And we have been talking about writing some more blogs for the Who Are These Candidates.
Yeah, we got to do
Meet the candidates. I feel like Perry Johnson might be a quality start.
I totally agree.
Right?
And maybe it would help us get to the bottom of what
that's what I feel like we need to figure that out. And I feel like the signature collecting fraud is going to be a fun story to tell. Like that seems like a fun story to tell. Maybe not to voters, if you're Perry Johnson.
Right.
But a fun story for us to tell you.
That's right. People who are not invested in any way in Perry Johnson's life or career.
Right. Yeah.
We have Vivek Ramaswamy.
Yep.
Also an early entrant into the race.
Yep.
Former big pharma CEO.
Yep.
He's running against corporate wokeness. So that's...
I mean, listen.
Super...
Sometimes I'm running against corporate wokeness also. So
yeah,
like
tenet of my campaign for president.
Right.
I feel that we're running against corporate wokeness for opposite reasons.
For opposite reasons. But I do feel like this is one of those
instances where we might come around and meet
each other on the backside.
We went on a long tangent about being mad at the Dodgers for caring so much about Pride that they had to cancel their own Pride event. So that
that's right.
So, you know, I could see us meeting him back there in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And then I think we just spoke about Francis Suarez, the mayor of Miami.
Yes.
He didn't know who the Uyghurs were, so that was
as soon as he jumped
concerning...
in, did like a long interview with Hugh Hewitt. And Hugh Hewitt was like, you're going to need to educate yourself or something like that. And it was like a very awkward interview moment.
I suspect that we might be anticipating further awkward interviews.
And that wasn't like a pop quiz question either, because I think that the way that he backed himself into having to answer to that was like railing about China, because all these guys love to rail about China.
They are so obsessed with China.
Yeah. So like...
They don't know who's in China.
I was going to say, know about China if you're going to go on, you know, a Hugh Hewitt's talk show and then like talk about China. So that's everyone that has fully announced, we think.
Right. But there are a bunch of people who have not announced who are being rumored still... to announce.
Right. And some of these are people we understand have said that they've ruled it out or...
But they're people we don't believe.
But they're people that we don't believe. So, right. Yeah. So Mike Rogers is a name that has been thrown around. He's been talking about making a political comeback. He gave up a seat in Congress in 2014 to become a radio personality. So, obviously, you would want to run for president.
Yeah. That's what you do next as soon as you're a media personality.
Yeah. Glenn Youngkin, Governor of Virginia... He's somebody who has been mentioned a lot and then has claimed that he's not going to do it. But then there were sort of like new rumors that were probably planted by him that maybe he was going to get back into the race.
One thing you can be sure of is if you start hearing rumors that somebody who has said they're not going to run is thinking of running, those rumors are planted by the person.
Right. That was a well-placed rumor.
Yeah. Nobody is talking about Glenn Youngkin running for running for president who is not Glenn Youngkin.
Yeah.
Like, people aren't just, like, gossiping about this.
No.
So, like, don't worry about that.
Right. Same with Greg Abbott.
Yep. Yeah. Another person who, if you've heard a rumor that Greg Abbott might be running for president, that rumor started explicitly
from the desk of Greg Abbott.
From the desk of Greg Abbott. Exactly.
Right. Christy Noem, just to make sure both Dakotas are well represented in the presidential primary.
And forcing you to ask yourself again and again which candidate is from which Dakota.
Right. Uh-huh.
And then Marco Rubio.
Of course.
Because there aren't enough people from Florida.
Little Marco needs to get back in.
That's right. Yeah, well, I am looking forward to the opportunity to rewatch Trump and Marco Rubio in a debate.
That would
I
be good.
Feel like Trump had a very unique ability to cut him down to size in a way that was very satisfying to watch.
He was really personally responsible for ruining Marco Rubio in that primary.
And I just don't know why Marco would sign up for a second round of this.
Well, that's probably why he hasn't declared yet.
I'm still wondering how he'll handle it.
Yeah. So this next batch of people are people who have specifically said they're not doing it.
Right. And we don't believe any of them.
We don't believe them. Right. Tom Cotton.
The man's been basically running for president since January 6th.
Right. And he's a person that I almost feel like I would say would maybe be a good candidate in this primary, actually.
Yeah. Like, not a good candidate for America.
Not for America. But I'm just saying, like, he sort of falls into the... kind of like into the Holly camp to a certain degree anyway, maybe not quite as sort of like faux populist, but just in terms of like having the, I don't know, there's a, he gives me a vibe that makes me feel like he could do it, I guess.
He has,
he's awful.
He has what Ted Cruz has without looking as evil as Ted Cruz.
Oh, interesting.
Where I think he has a certain kind of Republican charisma
that
comes from depraved evilness. Like, don't mistake what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
This is not even a Mike Huckabee level,
thing
that I'm talking about here.
Right.
I'm not talking about that kind of charisma. No. That's populist charisma. I'm talking about him being the kind of person who can make policies that are as dumb as Donald Trump's sound intellectual.
Yes, that's right. That's it.
And that, I think, is what Ted Cruz offered to the process, but just Ted Cruz himself seemed like such an idiot.
He's an air quotes thinking person's Republican in the same way that every other complete bozo has been a thinking person's Republican. You know, I can't think of exactly, you know, who they are specifically off the top of my head, but you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. There's been a million of those guys.
Right. Like the Paul Ryans of the world, who are supposed to like the have some sort of like, right, exactly. It's like, well, you're not because you're actually a stupid person.
Right. Yeah. But he has the tone of voice that's condescending enough to indicate that he thinks what he's saying is smart. And that's where I think he could take a Cruz-ish lane in a primary without suffering from Ted Cruz's horrible personality problems. Right. And that makes him a little dangerous.
That's right. Larry Hogan, former governor of Maryland, right? Is that right, Larry Hogan, I think?
Yeah, I think he's Maryland.
And he's been mentioned off and on for
He's a very medium a while. Republican.
He's he is. He's that would be his thing. And I feel like maybe there's a lane for that. There's not a winning lane, but I feel like it's a lane that might be missing like a big name currently now.
I agree. I think there's no winning lane for a moderate, but there's certainly an opportunity if he wants a book deal that's more in the seven figures range.
Right.
There's like an opportunity here for sure.
Right, exactly. Mike Pompeo.
Stay out of it.
Stay out. I think, yeah.
Don't come back.
Right.
I mean, he's the kind of guy who would try to come back.
Totally.
But he's the kind of guy who shouldn't.
Right. Rick Scott.
Also don't come back.
No. And that's another person that I feel like we may have even talked about on the podcast. I can't remember.
Yeah.
That there was an article about like maybe Rick Scott would be jumping into the race. And it's like, but why?
Stop all the Florida people.
Uh-huh. Chris Sununu.
Right. Here's the thing that I always have to say about the Chris Sununus of the world. I understand why New Hampshire people are always like, we should jump into the presidential race because they're an early primary state. And we're about to talk about how they plan to stay that way. No race has ever needed an additional New Hampshire person in it. That's not a winning ticket. That's not an interesting ticket. And New Hampshire, though it can give you a slight early boost, cannot do anything for you in terms of allowing you to represent a demographic of people that votes in this country.
Correct.
So stay out of it.
Right. Agreed.
And then Ted Cruz.
And he probably actually is staying out of it because he seems pretty well into his Senate reelection campaign in 2024. But, you know, we threw him on a list anyway because he's a wild card.
Well, and he's the kind of guy who really wants to be the president.
That's right. Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the people on the leftward side of the ticket.
Right.
Some only marginally leftward.
Some Joe Biden.
Right. Some of them are Joe
marginally
Biden. Some of them are RFK Jr. And I don't know that he fits neatly onto any spectrum
doesn't.
Of candidates.
No.
He's sort of like a lone lunatic.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, like, I would love to support somebody who isn't Biden. And I guess look, I'm probably not going to vote for Biden anyway. But like in a primary, I would love to
be able
first off, it would be great if we were having a competitive primary. But, you know, I'll probably just end up voting for Marianne Williamson just because.
As you've been promising.
Why
to.
Not? As I've been promising to. But right. So she's the next person on the list. But
yeah,
RFK Jr., like, I'm not trying to vote for him either. You know
and
what I mean? Like,
polling too well.
Too well.
I need us all to check ourselves a little
bit.
If he can pull that well, there's room for a candidate who's not him to pull better than one is currently polling.
I agree.
So it just feels like, let's not let's not go down this road.
Right. So Marianne Williamson, we just mentioned.
Oh my God. And the last thing I want, by the way, before we move on, is to have to hear RFK Jr. and any Green candidate, quote unquote, spoiler, compared repeatedly.
Oh God, I know.
I do not want to hear that Jill Stein and RFK Jr. are the same candidate.
I know. I know.
Maybe you're mad at Jill Stein. That's your business. They are not the same candidate. I don't want to hear bullshit about that. No. RFK Jr. is way more dangerous to you than Jill Stein.
God, hello.
And he's actually a personal anti-vaxxer.
Correct.
Doesn't just represent a caucus that inexplicably includes them.
Right.
But speaking of the Greens, Cornel West also running.
Yes.
Listen,
I'm going to vote for Cornel West. Sorry about it.
Right.
Come for me. I don't know so what you...
Nothing else.
You know.
We're being left with very few options here.
Right. Like, sorry, I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden.
No.
You know, and I actually have something that I want to say about that
Great.
Really quick. Because I sort of ragged on him at the end of the last podcast. And all of that stands.
Right.
But what I want everybody to know, friends, family, listeners, strangers, that your time spent convincing me of the reasons that I should vote for Joe Biden in 2024, all of that time could be better spent convincing someone else.
Yeah.
It's not going to be happening.
Also,
so like if you think that you've just thought of the best reason to vote for Joe Biden, then find a strange person on the street to tell it to. I don't want to hear it.
Also,
I don't want to know.
Use the time to convince America to have a voting system that would allow Brent or Mai's vote to count.
Or a phone bank.
Right.
Right? Like literally tell a stranger. I don't want to hear it from you.
No.
It's not happening.
It's also not a good use of your time anyway, because our votes don't count for shit.
Also that. Right.
So like, don't worry about
call
us.
Call somebody in Des Moines.
Call someone in Des Moines. Call your friends. Call your family. Call your aunt.
Yeah. But don't call me.
No.
Don't come for me unless I send for you.
I feel like we say some version of that every election, and people come for us anyway.
I know. Remember when I talked you into voting for Biden in 2020?
Yeah. Remember when I had a panic attack at the voting booth? I mean, at the drop-off point? I believe I called my mother from on the way home and was like, that was a mistake.
Well, you were right.
I think we were about to say the same thing. It seems like if for some reason, health or otherwise, Biden does not run, we have a shadow campaign being waged right now by Gavin Newsom.
Right. He's already doing it. And he's doing it under the guise of trying to get Joe Biden reelected and talk about how much better Democrats are than Republicans. But I think he's doing it in all of the places that you would do if you were just going to turn it into a presidential campaign.
Run for president.
Exactly.
Totally.
And I think everybody knows that he's doing it. And it seems like everybody is like generally fine with
honestly,
it. If
Bernie
Sanders
have a
was doing this right now, they'd be like, you know, trying to kill him in his sleep. But like, I think
luckily,
you know,
Newsom is incredibly ineffective, so no one is that threatened by him. But it does feel like we need some kind of backup plan.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad somebody's running a backup campaign.
Yeah.
Because it would be nice to have a backup option.
Yeah.
We're
in a risky spot, you guys.
We're in a risky spot.
Everyone's old.
Yeah.
And it's not even just Joe Biden. The Republican ticket's too old too. Everyone's too old everywhere.
Totally.
This is too many old people. Retire. Enjoy your grandchildren.
Please.
Like, get out of the business.
Get out. Now onto our weekly segment of talking about why No Labels is awful.
Yeah.
We promised it being a weekly segment. And look, let me tell you something. I'm not looking for these stories.
No, they're
just
you.
Out there.
They're sending for you.
They're sending for me. You don't have to look very hard to find a story about No Labels being the fucking worst.
Yeah.
And this week's entry into that is that they are basically using a group to do their, what are they doing? They're signature collecting? Is that what they're doing?
They're gathering signatures in Colorado. They're hiring one of those like PACs basically.
Yes, that's
that
what
you
they
hire
did.
To
yes.
like help you collect signatures. And that is a sort of like a nonprofit entity of sorts.
Right.
That is a Republican
Right. They've hired Blitz Canvassing to help them do this. And it's essentially Ron DeSantis's company, not owned by Ron DeSantis, but has worked exclusively for Ron DeSantis to the tune of like something like $8 million in his like all of the reason that Blitz Canvassing is in business is because of Ron DeSantis. And they've also, they're based out of Colorado because that's where they've focused like most of their energy. And they actually, I think, are on the ballot in Colorado, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yes,
I think
they are. They're considered to be an independent presidential unity ticket in 2024.
They've
qualified as...
Only works for Republican
candidates. Only works for Republicans.
Which
they've worked for every major Republican candidate in
In Colorado,
including the ones who have run, you know, against the Democrats there, obviously, because that's what Republicans do. They run against Democrats.
But that's what Democrats do. They don't run against Republicans, but Republicans always running against Democrats.
Yeah, but they've run they've been the organizers for, GOP Senate candidate Joe O'Dea, who ran against, I think, Michael Bennett. You know, all of these people. And also, no labels. And this is what we talked about the last week. Last time on the podcast when we were ragging on them, is that they are paying through all of this, you know, through their nonprofit, but it's to run a presidential ticket.
Yeah, it's directly political. Nonprofit is capped at the amount of explicitly political work they're allowed to do.
They are doing this to try and get a presidential line on ballots in states across the country, and they shouldn't be allowed to do that. It's illegal.
They should lose their tax exempt status for doing the work that they're doing.
Right. It's so shady.
Well, of course it's of course it's shady.
Right. And of course a group that is is run by Joe Lieberman and trying to run Joe Manchin as their presidential candidate is like
a
using Republican groups. But like, I just want to weakly remind you that when they talk about running a unity candidate, you might be a general idiot who thinks that that just sounds like a great idea. Everybody just work together?
Yeah.
And you're thinking, well, gosh, this just members of all the parties.
The guy
just
who holds
really
up all legislation.
That's not what's happening here.
It's Republicans.
They're a shady fucking group fashioning themselves as a unity party who is only Republicans. By the way, they have also, you know, I think most of their funding is from Republicans also.
Of course. Who else would donate to that kind of a thing?
Right.
There's always some, like, you know, back channel-y Republican.
Harlan Crow
is the donor. Exactly. Like, there's always some back...
That's the guy who's funding...
SCOTUS.
SCOTUS, right. What's his name? Clarence Thomas.
Clarence Thomas, yeah. He's paying for Clarence Thomas's mother's house and his son's boarding school or something. There's always... Any group like this that is positioning themselves as the sober alternative to crazy Republicans is always exclusively Republicans.
Correct.
They're trying to wrestle back control because they have lost control of the main Republican Party. It is not Democrats that are
this
doing
this. This is why I don't fuck around with the Lincoln Project.
No, exactly.
By the way.
The same fucking people. This is the same genre of people, for sure.
The same genre of people. I would contend potentially worse.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they're actually trying to be spoilers.
Remember when
they announced that they weren't going to be spoilers by describing that their plans would be specifically to be spoilers?
I do remember that. Yeah.
Like the textbook definition of
the
spoiler?
Anyway, you don't let these groups fool you. Don't get involved.
Don't get involved. Also, any group that is being fronted by just like a bunch of crotchety old men who have famously switched parties like 100 times is not a group to be trifling with.
No.
That's a group of Republicans. They were Republicans when they were Democrats, and they're Republicans when they're Republicans.
Also, if this group is responsible for anything that Ron DeSantis is currently doing, then don't trust them, because what a mess that campaign is.
This is
the I Told You So segment that we
promised. We couldn't have been righter about this, you guys. There's not one detail of this latest sort of like band of revelations about Ron DeSantis that we did not warn you about literal months ago.
Right. We said people are going to meet Ron DeSantis... And then it's all going to go to shit.
That's right.
And when he announced, back before, you know, Trump started ragging on him, he was polling in January, and that was well before he announced, but he was like at 40%. He's in the low 20s now. It is like...
People encountered him for the first time.
Right. It has fully bottomed out.
Well, and there were two things that we said. One was that these candidates that get announced as early front runners always peter out. We saw it happen with, you know, Jeb Bush. We saw it happen with Scott Walker. We saw it happen with John Huntsman in 2012.
Yeah.
Politico also compared him to Phil Graham in 1996. We weren't doing a podcast at that time, but I think you understand the trend.
Yeah.
I can't believe we were doing a podcast in 2012
because that's
because we were. So we have already spoken for the last decade with you about how these early candidates crash and burn anyway.
Yeah.
And that's not always because they're horrible people. I mean, John Huntsman was just boring.
Right, exactly.
You know? I mean, Jeb Bush turned out to be a little dumb. Scott Walker, more lunatic-y than anyone thought. But, like, sometimes it's just too early. 2013, Hillary Clinton peaked too early. Mm-hmm. Like, not 2013, sorry.
Yeah, 2007.
2007.
Whatever,
2007, Hillary Clinton peaked too early.
Right.
I know years. It's fine. I was staring at the wrong... I was staring at a year. Anyway, so this is what happens. And so we had already said that. Then we said, that every piece of information that people learn about Ron DeSantis moving forward will be information that makes them less likely to vote for him.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is turning out to be definitively true. There's right. not been one piece of news about Ron DeSantis that hasn't been embarrassing.
No, and he is just getting absolutely bludgeoned in the early states, too. I mean, he's yeah. ahead. Trump is ahead by 24 points in Iowa. He's ahead by 27 points in New Hampshire. He's ahead by 20 in South Carolina. And the fundraising hasn't been great either. He's, no. you know, I think his PAC is raking in like a lot of money because he has some, you know, well-heeled donors. But like, you know, he in Q2 raised $20 million, which sounds like a lot of money because I suppose that it is. But when you really dig into those numbers, $8.2 million of that was on announcement day.
Yeah.
And so, which means that on day one, after day one, through the rest of Q2, the average was $300,000 for the next 36 days. Now, we don't know how that averaged,
right.
averaged out per day, but like, that is not good.
No.
No. So,
and also, he doesn't have any endorsers.
None. That's kind of wild to me, actually, truth be
well,
told.
Well, it's wild, and also, I feel like it's not wild, because it's a thing that his campaign in particular should have understood the environment they were right. announcing in. And
we should have launched with some.
They should have launched with some. And they should have known before they launched if they were going to be able to get any. And if they had found out that right. the answer was no, they should have not launched.
Yeah. He only has, like, the Oakland governor, Kevin yeah. Stitt. That's, like, the only named person that 538 yeah. is. And they have an endorsement.
The governor of Oklahoma is not a prized endorsement to anyone.
No, it's not. He may end up getting Kim Reynolds because, like, they're, like, best pals, I guess, probably from, like, the Governor's Association or something. And sure. she has claimed that she's going to stay neutral, which I believe she may have attempted to do, but then Trump just, like, lambasted her yesterday for staying neutral.
Exactly.
And basically, like, claiming that he was the one who got her elected, like he likes to do. He's claimed that
well,
about
he's claimed
DeSantis,
that,
also.
Yeah, about everyone.
But I'm curious if that will maybe move her in a way that yeah. he wished it hadn't. but we'll see whether that
But also, what does that mean, anyway, yeah. that maybe Ron DeSantis yeah. gets a boost in Iowa that gets him so he's only down 10 points? Like,
right,
what is that going to do?
Yeah.
He's still going to have to be himself
yeah.
in Iowa. And I think
yeah.
what we were learning, based on videos taken of him being in Iowa, is that the sort of tactic by which you gain support in Iowa is you shake hands with every single person in the state. Meaning
right,
every
he's
person, he's
and,
awkward.
Right, he's awkward. If you shake hands with Ron DeSantis, you might very well leave that interaction thinking that you're not going to vote for him.
Exactly. Like, these are people that have met, like, every candidate who has ever run for president in all of history. They've met people with sparkling charisma repeatedly
right.
over the course of the last, you know, 50 years.
Yeah, nobody knows sparkling charisma more than an Iowa caucus goer.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, and that's also... It, I feel like the sparkling charisma really sparkles at, you know, in a place where every candidate has had to pass through with the same stump speech 100 times.
Right.
Like, you can, whoever has charisma in Iowa has really had to, like, work for it.
Yeah.
It's a very uninspiring place to give repeated speeches because you're
it
at the
really
same
is.
Barbecue 100 times.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, like, reasons have been floated, you know, it's just like he has a new team, like people don't know his biography yet, like people don't know that he was in the service.
What are they gonna learn about his biography that is gonna make them overlook how awkward he is?
I know, it's so true. Yeah. Politico, who was one of the publications who wrote sort of a similar story. Well, and that's the other thing too, like there's a narrative taking hold.
Yeah.
And that, like,
multiple
is never what you want. So,
outlets
like,
are writing about how his
right,
campaign
you,
is
you,
crashing and burning.
Right. You don't want five publications, like national publications, to come out and be like, what's wrong with your campaign?
Yeah.
But anyway, so Politico was one of these that had reached out to him and or had written this, and they reached out to Trump for comment, and he gave one, obviously, because of what's
well,
Trump going to do,
not
going to give a comment.
This is actually also one of my favorite comments of his, because he gives Ron DeSantis a nickname of his nickname.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah. He said, Ron DeSanctimonious's problem isn't with the campaign. It's with the candidate. Voters just don't like him. His allies have spent tens of millions of dollars and knocked on thousands of doors. But the more the voters learn about Ron DeSantis, the less they like him. He has to be looking for an exit ramp at this point because he has no shot in this race.
What if we just let Donald Trump be a pundit?
I
Sometimes
know.
He's right. And when
I know.
He's right, I feel like he has the most interesting turns of phrase when it comes to being right about other candidates
he
in the
really
race.
Does.
I feel
yeah.
like if we just gave him the chance to, like, commentate,
yeah,
maybe he could just do that and leave us alone.
Yep.
He seems to really enjoy it.
He really does.
We could just give him medals every once in a while to be like,
yeah.
you're the best.
Right.
And
you're
then,
you're right. You're doing important work.
Yeah, exactly.
Sir.
It's like,
yeah.
let him go be a concierge at Mar-a-Lago the rest of the day.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah?
That's what he wants to do. There's also some drama with the DNC primary field.
Yes.
as I think we've mentioned on the podcast, the DNC took the extraordinary and kind of weirdly stupid move of making South Carolina the first primary of this cycle.
Yeah, just a quick recap. After Iowa sort of failed,
bungled it.
The last time, the DNC put forward a bunch of things that they wanted states to have to meet to be able to go first in the calendars, because they were getting rid of Iowa to go first. And then, against all odds, picked South Carolina to go because they met none of those qualifications.
I was going
to
say, I mean, literally we're talking about a state that has not voted for a Democratic candidate since the 70s.
They wanted it to be a competitive Democratic state. They wanted it to be a union state. Right. South Carolina is a right-to-work state. They wanted to... South Carolina fit no bill other than they voted for Joe Biden. So Joe Biden wanted them to go first.
That's right. And also, the head of the DNC is Jamie Harrison. And, you know, his mentor is James Clyburn. Right. Like, there's a strong South Carolina lobbying contingent inside of the sort of, like, DNC power structure.
Yeah.
That also kind of signed off on this, I think, even, you know, Jamie Harrison is sort of claiming, like, oh, I didn't advocate for this, but I'm just, like, happy it happened. But, like, it doesn't hurt that the entire DNC leadership is, like, invested in South Carolina specifically.
Yeah.
But so in any case, so look, everyone understands how Iowa got pushed out. And, you know, they're trying to move away from caucus states, which I also understand as early states.
Right. But Iowa even offered
they offered
to move
to
that.
Right.
They
primary offered system. New Hampshire was just like, fuck no.
Right.
Like,
well, I think isn't it in their state constitution
their state
that they
constitution.
Have to go? They would be violating like their own constitution if they don't go first.
Yeah, because they're the first, you know, because Iowa is a caucus,
they're the
first primary state. And so while the DNC moved to make them in the second round of states, they were just like, oh no, we're going to go first. So they have just decided to move ahead with plans to go first.
Right.
And Iowa has moved ahead with, Iowa is talking about moving ahead with plans to just carry out a caucus that's like not a real caucus, I guess, just like whenever the Republicans do it, which would be first.
Right. I think they were talking about like sending out like voter preference cards or something like that. So it's
like
basically like voting,
caucus.
But not, right. Yeah.
Like a mailing caucus, basically.
Yeah.
But so in any case, all of this has been designed to sort of like protect the Biden campaign.
Right.
And that is, I think, the central point in a lot of this drama, because there was a lot of shock in the room when they announced this plan. It was not like all of the membership of the DNC was like aligned on this point. And also, I think, you know, there's concerns rightfully about New Hampshire. For one thing, RFK is polling really well
really
there.
Really well there.
You know, libertarians would like RFK.
I was gonna say, that tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But, you know, I think the reason that they're, you know, sort of advocating South Carolina as an early primary state is because there's a, you know, strong black vote in South Carolina.
Right.
It's, you know, a state that I think has traditionally helped to kind of galvanize support for very moderate institutional candidates. And so I think the DNC itself feels like that's a smart place to kind of like invest in their moderate vision.
Probably saved the campaigns of Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, Clyburn had been advocating for it to continue being the first Southern state, which is a whole different conversation than the first state in the union. But I think that there's like...
As it turns out, there's other states that have like heavy black voting populations.
Yeah.
Let's not...
Well, I mean, we talked on this podcast about like if you want it to be a Southern state and you want it to be a state with a large black voting population,
yes,
why
Georgia,
not Georgia?
Obviously, right.
Georgia actually votes for Democrats
sometimes.
There's
a million answers that are better than South Carolina.
Yes, a million. And I would say one of the answers that I feel like frustrates me, or one of the things that frustrates me the most about the conversation that is resulting from all of this, where it's like, should it be Iowa or South Carolina, is none of these are states with fucking cities in them.
Well, yeah.
If you want to find... you know, 70% of Americans live in cities. And cities are Democratic strongholds.
Democrats, right.
There are plenty of ways to find states that have strong black vote that also have urban voting populations. And I'm not using urban as a euphemism here. I'm using urban to mean people who live in cities.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's, I think, another thing that Georgia offers that South Carolina doesn't offer.
Yeah.
But we're, you know, they were, Jamie Harrison was talking about how this means that, you know, candidates are going to have to talk about, you know, the issues that affect, like, black voters in South Carolina instead of, like, ethanol in Iowa. They're going to have to talk about a whole new slate of issues. And I was like,
not really.
Yeah, but not really, because they're both rural states. Like,
there are
issues that would be impactful to both black voters and other voters that you should have to talk about in early primary states that they're not going to have to touch on once. Like, I also don't think that the Democratic voting population in South Carolina necessarily even bears a lot of resemblance to black voters in other states.
Right.
So, like, it's just such a ludicrous idea.
Yeah. I agree.
And I am sort of curious to see what happens with New Hampshire.
I know it's going to be interesting because, like, if the DNC is so hellbent on recognizing the calendar as is, I think there's no way that Biden is going to be on the ballots in those places, right? Because, like, he's not going to want to be seen as running in a competitive New Hampshire primary.
Exactly.
If they're claiming that South Carolina is the first state and they've redone this calendar. So does RFK win the Democratic primary in New Hampshire? Probably, right?
Yeah.
And does he also win a whatever they run in
Iowa?
In Iowa, maybe. I don't know. I mean,
they're sort of like waiting to see if they want to take their cues from New Hampshire because their Republican caucus is now being held in mid-January.
Mid-January. So I know. That's
really,
our next story. Right. Yeah.
You know, moving up the calendar ladder.
Yeah. It's wild. It's going to be interesting to see how it pans out because, like, that's not going to be, like, cute for Biden. Although, I mean, I'm sure that they'll, you know, I'm not saying that
RFK
is
always
going to sort of, I was going to say, and then the media will play along with that too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know.
No, but it's an awkward situation to leave your voters in, because there's no way to argue to the bulk of Democratic voters that this is an inherently more fair way to run the process. It would be one thing if they were choosing a state like Georgia that is sort of like an emerging Democratic state.
Yeah.
First of all, that has a diverse population, that has an urban population.
Yeah.
I could see making an argument for that being the first state. And I could also see an argument for making one of the big stronghold states be a first state. Because I think that lets you know where your voters are.
Yeah.
But it's like,
we talked about Michigan too.
Right.
If they wanted
Michigan
to stay in the Midwest, right?
Because
big urban centers, large black
more representative
population.
To have South Carolina than Iowa? Not really.
No.
Like, at that point, you're not really solving the problem.
No.
You know, you're just sort of solving the problem in the sense that Joe Biden wants the demographic that is most, he has the biggest stronghold with to be the first voting, you know, block in the union.
Yeah.
But that, I don't know that necessarily, like, you know, resolves the bigger problem with the Democratic primary system where the candidates that we choose are candidates people are generally just not excited about.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Anyway, it's done.
Yeah, you met, right. You mentioned the GOP caucus in Iowa, which is happening on January 15th. I guess they've done it as recently as, or as early as January 3rd in 2012, which is very wild.
Wake up, it's New Year's Day, and then 2 days later, you're voting for president.
I know, it's wild. And it's been in February recently. Like, why don't they stick to a date? And doing it on January 15th, I don't really think is actually the story. Because, like, my takeaway here is that January 15th is MLK Day.
Right.
And Democrats have done it at that time as well. I think fairly recently, actually. They did it in 2004 on MLK Day. I just think that it's hilarious. And we can talk about whether, you know, Republicans should be doing it on MLK Day.
Right.
That's a separate conversation. But the head of the Republican Party there, I thought, said an interesting thing where he sort of admitted that doing it on a national holiday had a lot of advantages.
Wild.
To which
people being able to vote?
To which I wanted to be like, yes, you're right. Why won't your party, party railroading making it so easy to vote?
Yeah.
Or like doing a national holiday.
Well, Brent, if you do it for a primary day,
then only
Republicans
will do it.
Can show up. But if you do it on a regular day, Democrats might show up. They're not trying to do that.
Yeah, but he like went on some like long diatribe about like how great and wonderful it would be that everybody would have the day off.
That's so wild.
Yes, you're correct.
Yes. Yeah, no, you're halfway there. That's also true on other election days. That's true anytime you're asking people to vote.
These people, I guarantee you, if anybody in the room would have asked them a follow-up question, whether election day should be a national holiday, he would have been like, well, no.
Right, no, exactly.
What are you talking about?
That's ridiculous.
That's crazy.
Productivity.
Oh, these people. Friends, I just don't know about these people sometimes.
I don't know.
I don't know about the Freedom Caucus or Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I don't know because I feel like that story has gotten more confusing by the moment.
I feel like all the headlines were like she's been removed, but like
she hasn't been
told, and we don't know what the actual vote was because it's like an internal meeting and they're like not telling the press and like they're being fairly tight-lipped
about
it.
Let me tell you what happened is they leaked to the press that she had been removed and no other information.
Right, but now exactly.
They decided, maybe they just voted on deciding to leak that to the press without further clarifying anything. I don't know what they actually decided. Like someone leaked it, but we don't have any actual follow-up.
Right.
So it was just a fun news story for a day because they're mad at Marjorie Taylor Greene, but it's like, what does this mean?
Right. Well, that is my absolute favorite thing about this because the reason that they took this, and look, she's been on their wrong side since the whole like McCarthy speaker vote. So like, I get it. But the thing that finally pushed them over the edge was that she called Lauren Boebert a little bitch on the House floor. And like literally, like it was like either the next day or like 2 days later. And they called a caucus meeting to vote. It was 2 days later.
Yeah.
On the final day before the 2 week 4th of July recess, they were like, we got to call this vote. Right?
We can't just be
like,
having this lady
They were not fucking around. They were like, we got to get her out of here. She's calling people names. That's right.
She's calling people names and she's supporting an ineffectual speaker.
Oh, man. It's just wild, though, because, like her spokespeople are being like, this is not what happened. And, like, because...
But who do you even believe in this situation? Well, there's no way to know who's telling the truth.
I know.
I mean, I don't know what's going on with them.
I know. On a scale of Rick Perry to Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is the most trustworthy one?
Yeah, no, there's no way to know.
There's literally no way to know.
No, so this is just gossip.
I feel like gun to my head.
Yeah.
I pick Marjorie Taylor Greene, which feels like a wild thing to say, but like.
Interesting.
And I don't know, I couldn't explain it to you, but I just feel like if you were forcing me to pick.
I feel like she would be a less competent liar. But I also feel that her truth is not always my truth. So it's hard to know, even if she's not lying, what the world truth is versus her personal truth.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm hmm.
You know, so I think it's complicated in that sense.
So complicated. So anyway, she either has or hasn't been kicked out of the House Freedom Caucus.
Sadly, we can't confirm or deny.
Right. So that's that story.
That's right. Let's talk about Barbie.
Listen, the GOP is wilding out.
They really are.
They always are. But like, this is just, I don't understand why they don't get that it's this shit that makes people be like, y'all need to get a grip.
Yeah.
Like, several grips. You need to get several
multiple grips. Yeah.
Because apparently, in the Barbie movie, there is, and you can find a picture of it, a like cartoon, like hand-drawn crayon map of the South China Sea. I don't know why, because the movie is not out yet, so we can't know. I certainly intend to see it.
We're going to find out for sure.
We're going to find out. But apparently there is what's called the Nine Dash Line, which is a contested maritime boundary that Beijing draws more than 1,000 miles off its own coast to claim the vast majority of the South China Sea as its territory. And that pisses off other Asian countries because they like to think that it's theirs.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
So the GOP got all up in arms because it was just Hollywood, you know, kowtowing to the Chinese Communist Party. In their hand-drawn cartoon Barbie maps.
I'm sure that...
The liberal Hollywood just up to it again.
Greta Gerwig is getting personal phone calls from China.
Throwing their lot in with the commies in their Barbie maps.
It's too funny. It's... Imagine getting incensed about this. And then thinking to yourself, I'll give a speech about that. I'm going to make a public comment.
I mean... God... He said, I hope Warner Brothers clarifies that... Representative Mike Gallagher. He said, I hope Warner Brothers clarifies that the map was not intended to endorse any territorial claims and was, in fact, the work of a formerly plastic and anthropomorphic doll. So he at least tried to be cute about it. But
I also don't feel that Warner Brothers needs to clarify that.
They don't. And they did, actually, because it was an easy thing to clarify.
Right.
In some instances, you would think maybe they just wouldn't wade into this. But in this instance, they were like... You're a fucking idiot. They said the map in Barbie Land is a childlike crayon drawing. The doodles depict Barbie's make-believe journey from Barbie Land to the real world. It was not intended to make any type of statement.
Oh, no.
I can't.
Political discourse.
Political discourse. Oh, my God. Whew. More political discourse in our final story.
Yeah. Donald Trump, a man who... It's hoping, against hope, that one day he can bring the ocean to Las Vegas.
Listen, I love it when he does this. I know that I shouldn't, that's not why we're not having that conversation right now. We're not having a larger conversation about whether I should or shouldn't Trump speaking extemporaneously in front of microphones.
That's right.
That's for a different time.
A different conversation.
We've had it before, actually. Yeah. I enjoy this when he does this. It gives me joy. Yeah, I'm sorry. No, I don't know what to tell you.
This was great entertainment.
He was talking in Las Vegas, and he said, and remember, Florida's easier than other places. You have the ocean, and you have the sun. There's something about that that works. But you have the sun, too. But you don't have the ocean. I can tell. You don't have the ocean. Maybe someday you'll have the ocean. You never know. Someday, hopefully it's a long time away though, right? Just prognosticating in front of a
maybe
giant,
someday they'll have those
a giant audience in Las Vegas about the joy of them someday maybe having an ocean.
If ever there was a place to bring an ocean. They have New York. They have an Eiffel Tower.
They do. They have Paris.
They have Paris.
They have it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that's what he meant.
I don't think that's what he meant.
I think it was sort of like a weird tacit acknowledgement
of
climate
change.
Climate change?
I know. Is he acknowledging that climate change is real in this speech, but hoping for it also? He's like, the benefits of climate change.
God. Las Vegas would just be doing such a bang-up job.
The ocean.
They... Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Donald Trump for you. Just a man dreaming of the ocean in the desert.
These people.
It's a little inspirational when you think about it.
Can't be stopped. None of them. They can't be and they should be.
They need to be. We have to really focus on stopping them, in fact. It's pretty important.
I know. Oh, man. Have fun at Netroots.
Thank you. Yeah, I will be back in front of this microphone to tell you and you all about it. And hopefully to report on fun. I feel like Netroots can go two ways. It can either be like a Democratic CPAC where like people say wild and crazy things in front of microphones then gets picked up by progressive media.
Yeah.
Or it can be boring. So I'm hoping for the former.
I'm hoping so too.
Yeah.
I have some fears.
I have some fears, but I'm keeping, right. I'm staying optimistic.
Right. You're going to see a bunch of people who like to pretend that they are the adults in the room.
That's so true. And I am worried about what my role is in a room full of adults.
As the person who has never had that concern.
Exactly. In any case, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.